Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, your backstage pass to revealing conversations with stars, creators, and industry leaders on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Stephen Schwartz. He is, of course, the composer of Godspell, Pippin, Wicked, and more. And lately, he's a busy guy. He recently celebrated the 20th anniversary of Wicked, at the same time that he's overseeing the music for the big-budget movie version, the first part of which comes out next year. Meanwhile, The Prince of Egypt, the stage musical adaptation of the 1998 animated film, arrived on VOD this month in a filmed stage performance recorded during the show's West End run. And he's also got a new musical in the works, The Queen of Versailles, based on the documentary of the same name and starring his Wicked collaborator, Kristen Chenoweth. Now he's in the virtual studio with me to give us the latest on all that and more.
Hey, Stephen. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Gordon. Good to be talking with you. Thanks.
Yeah. So The Prince of Egypt is a stage musical that's been around for a while, but it's one that a lot of audiences here in the States anyway haven't had a chance to see. So for folks who haven't seen it, first of all, they should know there are a lot more songs in the musical than there are in the movie, right?
Well, sure. You know, yeah. I mean, an animated feature is limited in its length and has, you know, fewer songs just by nature of what the genre is. And then when one adapts for the stage, you have two acts and you can go into a lot more depth with the characters and with the events, and therefore more songs are required in order to tell the story. So one of the enjoyable things about doing Prince of Egypt for the stage was to kind of revisit that musical palette and then, you know, write some new songs, with the intention of staying within the same kind of sound that the original animated feature had.
Yeah, how do you characterize that palette when you say you revisit the palette? What's the mood and the tone and the tools that you're working with?
Well, it's cultural. You know, I did a lot of research for the original film in terms of music of the region. You know, I listened to Hebraic lullabies and the Middle Eastern, instrumentation. I had a recording that I found, which purported to be of music from the ancient Egyptian court, though how they possibly knew what that was, I don't know, but it involves a lot of brass. And I got kind of pop records on the streets of Cairo, what were they sort of listening to, and made an amalgamation of that. And so consequently, when we were doing the stage show, I went back and listened to that and then had a lot of discussions with my wonderful orchestrator, August Eriksmoen, about what authentic instruments can we use so we really try and give a flavor of the region and of the culture and the two clashing cultures as well.
Yeah. So, and what are those instruments that you don't often see in a Broadway
Well, there's a lot of, percussion, specific percussion instruments. There are stringed instruments like the oud that make certain, they have different tunings, et cetera. And as one, watches the video and hears the orchestration, you'll hear a lot of that instrumentation. And I think, in the stage show, and so I assume on the video, there are places where you actually see, particularly our percussionist on stage, playing some of the authentic percussion instruments of the region.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about how how the stage musical tells the story differently, or how it fills out the story from what people saw on screen.
Well, the concept of the original animated feature came from Steven Spielberg when we were dealing with the Moses story and, if you will, the Ten Commandments. And he said, we want to view this as a brother story. We want to view this as the story of two young men who have grown up together, who love each other, who have a great relationship. And then, even though there's some undercurrents of jealousy, et cetera, but then their destinies force them to be opponents and antagonists. Mm-hmm. And how do we tell that personal story? And then ultimately how they come to reconciliation. And I think we were able to do that a lot more fully in the stage show than we were in the animated feature. It's less good guy, bad guy. Even though we really tried to avoid that, even in the animated feature, but more strongly in the stage show, it was important to us that this not become a story of my God's better than your God, but a story of the need for empathy, the need for being able to look at a situation through someone else's eyes, obviously a quality much lacking in contemporary society, and we see in some ways the same old grievances that exist in Prince of Egypt being played out in our headlines today in the horrible situation in the Middle East. I wish the show were less contemporary than it turns out it is, if you know.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a real urgency now to some of what Prince of Egypt is about and what's going on in the world. Yeah. Do you have a particular favorite of any of the new songs that you wrote for the stage show?
I don't really talk about favorite songs. Yeah. And the reason I don't is because I don't want to get in the way of the audience's own reception. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to be listening to something through the filter of, oh, this is his favorite. Why is that? That being said, I was glad for a couple of opportunities in the stage show musically that we weren't able to do in the animated feature. There's a song where Moses responds to the devastation that is brought on by the plagues, and you see the emotional cost that it takes on him, which is called For the Rest of My Life. Again, this is a song that seems unfortunately extremely contemporary in terms of what's going on right now. There's also a whole new character of Nefertari, who is Ramses' betrothed and his wife, and then she becomes his wife in a very real way in the course of the show. And she has a response to the death of her child, the firstborn, called Heartless. And again, I was very glad to have an opportunity to explore that. You know, she's a character. I like characters where you think you know who they are, and then you find out that they're more than you think. I always like that when I encountered in other works. And we try to do that, I think, in the show and with several of the characters, but especially with her.
Yeah. The show premiered in Northern California, and it had a run in Copenhagen, and then one at Tuacon in Utah. And then there was this version that started performances in 2020 for the West End that is revised to some degree. Can you tell us about what that means?
Yeah, I mean, in the development of a show, one is you're always developing until you finally have the finished version. And so, this was all part of the developmental process. Having run whatever it was a year in the West End, dealing, of course, with the horrors of COVID, but nevertheless, somehow, running a year there. Now the show is being prepared to be released so that, for licensing. Right. And as one does, we're actually making a few little tweaks to it still, because right. nothing is ever perfect, and you learn from each production and each experience and can always make it a little bit better.
Yeah. The director of that West End staging is one you know well, Scott Schwartz, your son. You've done a couple projects with Scott before. Yeah. What's it like collaborating with a family member?
Yeah, well, I mean, Scott is one of my favorite directors, not just because we're related, but we do have very similar sensibilities in the kind of theater we like and the kind of stories we like to tell. Scott began his career very deliberately not doing my work, establishing himself through shows like Tick, Tick, Boom and Bat Boy, you know, which he helped to create, et cetera. Right. But then he came on board when Disney's Hunchback of Notre Dame was being right. adapted as a stage piece, and he did it quite brilliantly, had a great staging concept that has now been done all over the world. And so when it was time to try to realize another animated feature for the stage, you know, the DreamWorks team was very interested in Scott, you know, being part of it. And, you know, I really value his theatricality. He and his choreographer, Sean Cheeseman, came up with the notion of not using a lot of, you know, mechanical stage machinery and great big props, et cetera, and really having the people themselves create things. So you have the, you know, the Nile being embodied by dancers as the basket with the baby is carried down the Nile, and you have dancers turning into chariots and stones in the desert and becoming the burning bush. And, you know, I like that the use of actors and dancers to embody these gigantic phenomena, you yeah. know, and that's the kind of thing that Scott comes up with that frankly would never occur to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So the show opened on the West End in February of 2020. And of course, that mm-hmm. was right before the whole world shut
right
down.
Right before COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. What was that period of uncertainty like? How, at what point, I imagine there was quite a bit of time where you weren't even sure that the show would be able to come back at all.
Yeah, exactly. You know, fortunately, it had done quite well in previews and was doing well when it, you know, from in terms of ticket sales when it shut down, but it was a very new show. And so it was very challenging to weather the whole COVID time, you know, keep the cast together, make yeah. sure they, you know, had insurance. Well, in UK, you don't need insurance, but,
right.
you know,
oh, right.
were, you know, could eat, yeah. et cetera. And then coming back from COVID was very challenging because the rules were very strict. And if you reopened and then one person in the cast got COVID, you had to close for 10 days again. And so, you know, that happened a couple of times and was extremely expensive. So from a financial point of view, it was extremely challenging. But as I say, somehow, you know, we did manage to eke out the year's run we were scheduled to do.
Yeah. And so how did this filmed version come about?
Well, because, you know, of the challenges of being able to keep a big show like that going through the whole COVID period, yeah. You know, Universal and people who had seen the show and really loved the production wanted to have some kind of permanent record of it that they could then, you know, share with broader audiences. And so the decision was made, as several shows are doing now, to do a video capture of it. Which I'm obviously very glad to have, because I think people who see the video will see, you know, I think the production is quite beautiful to look at. And so one gets to experience that and just the feeling of what it's like in the live theater. But also because there are cameras that move all over the place, it's like you have every seat in the theater and you also get to be on stage. So, you know, you get a lot of different perspectives to the show, which I think is exciting.
Yeah, yeah. And tell us about some of the cast for the musical, for the West End musical, and how that came together. It feels like diversity and representation were a real formative factor in the way you put that cast together.
Yeah, very, very much so. Obviously, mm-hmm. it was extremely important that the cast be diverse. But it's not sharks, you know, like sharks and jets. I mean, Scott felt that it was important not to have, you know, all the Hebrews look a certain way and all the Egyptians look a certain way and the upper class look a certain way. What he felt was like, this was an entire company that was telling this story, and at times they were all everything. So they were all the Hebrew slaves, or they were all upper class Egyptians, or they were all commonplace Egyptians, etc. And that this would be moved around, and that there was a real cultural diversity. Unfortunately, you know, we were able to find a lot of extremely talented people from different backgrounds and ethnicities.
I'll have more with Stephen right after the break. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. And now, here's more of my conversation with the composer of The Prince of Egypt, The Queen of Versailles, and Wicked, Stephen Schwartz.
The filmed version of Prince of Egypt, of course, comes out pretty soon after another show of yours, Wicked, celebrated a pretty big milestone on Broadway with its 20th anniversary. How were those festivities for you?
It was so nice, Gordon. You know, I saw people that I hadn't seen since the developmental stages of Wicked, since you know, workshops before we opened on Broadway. It was like a gigantic family reunion. You know, there were several people who had played Elphaba or Glinda or Fiero or had been part of the company who came. You know, I told people it was like having a family reunion attended by fans. So we were all family, and then there were a lot of people applauding them and taking their picture. So it was a really enjoyable experience.
Yeah. And so what is the day-to-day of your involvement in Wicked? You don't fully ever walk away from a show that's, you know, still running, particularly not in the number of productions that it is around the world, right? How does Wicked play a part in your life these days?
Oh, yeah. All of us, the creative team, work very, very hard at maintaining the show, trying to keep it very fresh. Just last weekend, I was in Philadelphia to see the tour. With Stephen Arimus, our musical supervisor, and Lisa Leguio, who's the director, who basically is in charge of maintaining the productions. And we were all taking notes, and I was working with the sound guy at the soundboard, et cetera. Because the fact is that, you know, someone who sees the show now, let's say on Broadway, where it's been running 20 years, if they're seeing the show for the first time, we want them to have the best possible experience. And not feel like they're seeing something that's, you know, a faded facsimile. So everyone works extremely hard to maintain the show and keep it at the highest possible level. And, you know, I'm part of that. I get emails. I got one today about a cast replacement. And would I look at the video that this young woman submitted, you know, and consequently be able to approve her as a, you know, Anessa Rose takeover, which I did because she was fantastic. But the point is that, you know, not just I, but all of us, you know, remain involved. Yeah. Obviously, we have careers and lives and other projects that we're doing, so it's not as full time as when you were originally doing the show. But there's definitely a commitment to maintain the show.
Yeah. And most of the productions of Wicked around the world look like the Broadway productions or follow the stamp of the Broadway production. But just recently, there was one in Sao Paulo that was an entirely new production. Did you get a chance to see that?
Oh, yeah. I went down and worked with them.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, yeah. And tell us a little bit about that production and what it brought out.
Yeah, it was so cool. Just now, they're starting to allow what we call non-replicated productions.
Right.
So... there was this excellent production in Sao Paulo I was just recently in Gothenburg, Sweden, mm-hmm. because they just did a non-replicated production there. And it's always fascinating, you know, yeah. to see a different director and a different design team reinterpret the story. I mean, obviously the show is the same, though, in the case of, you know, it was translated into Brazilian Portuguese and Sao Paulo right. and into Swedish and Gothenburg, et cetera. Yeah. But yeah, there are always like staging ideas that are different and cool. And, you know, listen, I think the Broadway production is really superb. And I just saw it again recently, obviously, for yeah. the 20th anniversary. But there's always different ways of doing things. So, you know, I without going into specifics of like, oh, they did the flying in this way and they did the wizard head in that way. And, yeah. you know, the set was differently designed in such and such a way. It's really fascinating to see those different approaches.
Yeah, the flying in the Sao Paulo production sort of, I saw a couple of clips of that. It looked very different from what we see on Broadway.
It is.
It's extremely impressive cool. in a different way. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Well, because she comes right out into the audience and you feel at one moment she's actually going to land on the audience. And it's, yeah. you know, there's yeah. like this gasp as she drops. And yeah. yes, it's very cool.
Yeah. And of course, there's also a Wicked movie or two in the works.
Yeah.
How are you? What's your involvement in that? Do you spend a lot of time? Do you need to want to spend a lot of time on set? Are you writing any new music for it? What's your involvement?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Winnie Holtzman has done the screenplay. And right. so she and I, along with our producer of both the show and the movie, Mark Platt, and yeah. director John Chu, did a lot of work on cool. the, you know, what is the screenplay? I don't know how much I'm allowed to tell in terms of publicity, sure. but I know it's out there that there are two new songs, although right. both of them are in the second movie. And there mm-hmm. are some adjustments of certain other songs, expansions and yeah. revisions. And then, you know, my job is to be in charge of the music. So, you know, I was there for all the pre-recording and will continue to be as the recording is finalized. I was on set a couple of times, which was really fun because the sets and the costumes are astonishing. Yeah, but that's my involvement so far. I know John Chu has been editing, but I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, are you liking what you've seen so far? That was my next question.
I haven't seen it yet. It's not okay. my job yet. I mean, obviously, once we get into scoring, et cetera, right. you know, then I will be involved with that. But I didn't feel it was appropriate for me to be sort of watching the sausage being made, if you know what I mean. Sure. I thought it would only be stressful. And but I feel that way about stage shows, too. I like to sort of, I feel like, let the director do his job or her job, you know,
yeah.
step out of the way. Let them do what they're going to do. And then I can come in, you know, with a clearer perspective. And if I see some issues, you know, help to turn a light on them.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of stage shows, you're working on a new one with your former Wicked collaborator, Kristen Chenoweth.
Yeah.
It's called Queen of Versailles, and it's based on the documentary. I had a reading in the spring.
Correct.
How did that go?
We're in process. So, yeah. We just finished a workshop period. Mm-hmm. It seemed to go very well, but mm-hmm. it's in development. There's lots to do, you know, things we need to fix and change and revise, and that will keep going through, you know, some more development process and an out of town tryout, presumably, you know, just right. that's how it goes until you get to, you know, I think it was Stephen Sondheim who said, you know, musicals are never finished, they're merely abandoned. And so basically yeah. you just yeah. keep working until basically you have to freeze the show before opening on Broadway, and then you abandon it until you get your next chance to do more work on it for licensing or for a London production or whatever. But yeah. there's always, you know, you can always make it better. So.
And when you're writing songs specifically for Kristen, how are you tailoring them specifically to her talents? Like, what does she like to write for as a singer and performer?
Well, Kristen has an extraordinary range.
Yeah.
As you know, she, well, because the character she's playing in Queen of Versailles would not have a soprano. She doesn't, she doesn't go back and forth the way she does in Wicked, where we develop, because of Kristen, the concept that Glinda has a public persona who sings in soprano and a private persona who is, you know, more whatever you would want to call it, you know, chest voice. Jackie Siegel is, you know, sort of mostly set, almost all set in that part of Kristen's range, but I know her voice very well. And, you know, obviously my job is to make her sound great on every single note. We have found, again, without giving it away right now, a way to sneak her soprano in one sequence, just because we should, because it's Kristen. Yeah, but basically it's, she's playing a character, and I think doing it really, really well. And therefore, you know, the songs are, of course, meant to be sung by Kristen, but within the context of the Jackie Siegel character she's portraying.
What is the, in the way you were talking about sort of the palette of the music for Prince of Egypt, what is the palette for Queen of Versailles?
Yeah, I don't know how much I'm allowed to give away. It's a pretty pop score, which is a little maybe country inflected. Again, just the nature of the character. There is an element, I'm going to be a little secretive about it, but there is an element that is quite different and involves some, you know, much more classically oriented music. That's all I'll say about that for now, because otherwise I'd be in real trouble with the producer.
Yeah. And so that will, that is making its way in toward its first production. What is the, what do you see as the future stage life for Prince of Egypt? You mentioned that now it's being sort of put out for licensing. Do you imagine a New York run at some point? What's your thinking?
Yeah, I don't know in terms of what will happen in, you know, in so-called first class productions, because that's an economic decision. The show was created originally. The reason that there became a stage show was a huge demand for theaters, theater groups, colleges, church groups, community theaters around the country and frankly around the world who wanted to do a stage version. And there were a lot of pirated versions being done. When I was working on something in Copenhagen, I saw that there was a pirated version being done at a town in Sweden nearby, and I went and saw
it. Did you go? Oh my God.
Yeah, I did, because, you know, and they sort of made up their own script and then stuck the songs in. And so, you know, finally Universal and DreamWorks said, well, you know, if people really want to do this, we should give them something to do.
Yeah.
And that was the, you know, the genesis for, you know, the impetus for doing the stage show. And now I think, as I say, it's going to be out there. I expect that there's a lot of interest. So I expect there'll be a lot of productions all over the place. And, you know, if there's a first class production in New York, great. And if there's not, that's fine, you know, but I feel, as we've been saying, it's a story that unfortunately has great contemporary relevance, and therefore, you know, having productions out there that may help people to think about others they consider their enemies in a different way, in a more compassionate and more empathetic way, if the show can help, you know, bring that into the world a little bit, that would be a great thing.
Yeah, so we will be seeing the show on stages everywhere and on screen very soon. Thanks so much, Stephen. Great to talk
to you. Thank you, Gordon. Yeah, great to talk to you too. Thanks for your interesting questions. Yeah.
Thanks.
Take care.
That was Stephen Schwartz of the musical Prince of Egypt, which is now available on VOD on Broadway HD, Amazon Prime, and more. If you enjoyed this conversation here on Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really does help. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft. Find past episodes and subscribe at all the places you get your pods, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, a great place to find more theater for your ears. Stagecraft will return in January after we take a little break for the holidays. Until then, find me on Instagram and Twitter at Gordon B. Cox. You can also check out my new newsletter about international theater. It's called Jaques, and it's at gordoncox.substack.com. Thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.